Hello, good morning, people near and far away. And good to see your faces. If you can, I'd prefer if you kind of turn your video on, but if not, that's okay too. It's just, for me, helpful to see all your beautiful faces in the morning. Today, I'd like to talk about courage. Been thinking about courage, of course, over the past few months, and really since January. And these are certainly turbulent days. There's so much uncertainty, anxiety, grief, fear. I'm sure you all feel the same, you know, when we read the newspapers or watch the news, perhaps on TV. Most of the articles, most of the items on the newscasts are about the COVID-19 crisis. The numbers who are sick, numbers who are hospitalized, who have died, numbers of those who have lost jobs, the struggle to find masks and other gear, the situation in this country, the situation in that country. And more recently, it's not just that, but also articles in deep concern about what will happen or what won't happen after the COVID-19 settles down. I noticed in myself, you know, after kind of gorging on this news for a while, I realized, yes, I do need to stay informed about what's going on. But I also realized I need to be careful not to be swept away, not to turn away, and yet also not to sink beneath kind of waves of despair and fear. And we all must take care of our health, yes. And we also must take care to steady our hearts, kind of bringing forth the willingness to be present and meet the present situation as it arises. So I've asked myself, during these turbulent days, where do we find our courage? Where do we find our courage to be present? Our courage to offer whatever we can to whoever we can? And what is courage? What are we talking about when we use the word courage? The English word courage is derived from the old French, meaning heart, which in turn comes from the Latin cor. May have the same meaning, the meaning of heart. So what does courage have to do with the heart? In our popular understanding, the heart is our innermost being, the kind of very core of who we are. Perhaps to live from our core, our very center, is in itself simply to live a life of courage, because then it is a truly authentic life. But there are other qualities to courage. In the Heart Sutra that we chant at almost every service, and well, we will chant it today too after the Dharma talk, is the line that I'm sure all of us are familiar with. A bodhisattva relies on prajna paramita, and thus the mind is without hindrance. Without hindrance, there is no fear. Is a mind or heart without hindrance or without fear, a mind of courage? No fear or fearlessness is, of course, well, simply the absence of fear. So perhaps to some extent we're just playing with definitions here, but I'd like to suggest that courage and fearlessness are not the same thing at all. Courage is not the absence of fear. After all the dumb and kind of reckless things that I did as a teenager, and I did them more or less fearlessly, they were not courageous. And they were simply stupid. Like the time I jumped off the roof of our house because a friend dared me. At any rate, courage has that quality of mind or heart that allows us to perhaps have tolerance or have patience with our fear. Courage is a kind of energy to meet our hindrances, to acknowledge and face the challenges in front of us, whether they be illness, dangerous circumstances, the climate crisis, giving a speech in front of a large crowd. Somehow courage allows us to meet our fear rather than turning away. Now, we typically associate courage with kind of heroic acts or brave deeds. And when I hear courage, sometimes what comes to my mind first are those kind of valiant actions of soldiers that I saw in old World War II TV shows that I watched as a child. Kind of brave bodily actions. And, of course, there's the courage that we see or read about in the news, where ordinary people summon unforeseen strength to run into burning buildings or stand up to bullies or tyrants, pull unconscious people out of car wrecks. Anyway, in some way, rise to a very dangerous situation. A kind of physical courage, maybe, we could say. Disregarding the danger that is present to the self. Of course, these days, healthcare workers are very much on our minds as examples of this kind of courage. The contemporary political philosopher Richard Avramenko writes in his book called Courage, The Politics of Life and Limb. He says, courage reveals what we care about. It reveals that which inspires us to overcome ourselves. And it is the self-overcoming character of courage that makes it so poignant. When we are witness to real acts of courage, we know immediately what matters most fundamentally to that courageous actor. And it is not herself or himself. Not her own physical well-being. This we may call a kind of outer courage, perhaps, or something like that. But partnered with this is what I call inner courage. And this is the courage to face ourselves, to face the demands of our life. And sometimes we need inner courage just to talk to our parents. Maybe we've been estranged from them. Sometimes we need inner courage to revisit a painful issue of some kind that arose with your partner. Sometimes we need inner courage to quit a job, maybe to be a whistleblower. And even something as simple as to write a poem, to take a yoga class, to call up a friend from long ago, all of those can require small acts of courage. Private, invisible acts of inner courage are not apparent to other people, and yet they break open the confines of our life. And this is the kind of courage, I think, that Dogen Zenji brings to our attention. Dogen is the Japanese monk who brought our particular form of Zen practice from China into Japan in the 1200s. And he left us quite a bit of writing. When Dogen built and moved with his monks to Eiheji, his big main training temple established in the mountains of Japan, he then started to give a series of formal Dharma hall discourses from about 1236 to 1252. The last one, in fact, just being about a year before he died. And these are relatively short talks or discourses, and they were compiled into a work called the Eihe Koroku, which is translated now into English as Dogen's Extensive Record. Anyway, Dharma Hall Discourse 239, they're given these numbers, was given at Eiheji, again his main training temple, in the spring of 1247, so just a few years before he died. And the title of this one, and I'm not really sure they had titles or these were simply given by the translators. Anyway, the title for this one is The Courage of Patch-Robed Monks. The Courage of Patch-Robed Monks. So I'm quoting now a couple of small passages from this discourse he gave. The courage of a fisherman is to enter the water without avoiding deep sea dragons. The courage of a hunter is to travel the earth without avoiding tigers. The courage of a general is to face the drawn sword before him and see death just like life. What is the courage of patch-robed monks? This is such an interesting question that he asks his monks. What is your courage? Like patch-robed monks, we don't face deep-sea dragons, tigers, or flashing swords. But we too need to ask the question, what is our courage? What is your everyday courage? I think it's easy to not see or really not appreciate our own acts, our own moments of inner courage. Like when we make the difficult phone call or broach a difficult subject with someone. And just as easily, I think we can avoid giving our inner courage life when we mindlessly follow our habitual rut of just turning away. We avoid making the phone call. We avoid broaching the difficult topic. The sociologist and writer Brené Brown notes that the usual definition of courage fails to recognize the inner strength and resolve that she feels the original word holds. And I think she's referring to the old French. Anyway, she offers this definition in her book called The Gifts of Imperfection. She writes, to speak one's mind by telling all one's heart. To speak one's mind by telling all one's heart. I think what she implies here is that courage is to speak and act honestly and openly from who we are, from what we experience. In other words, to trust our capacity to accept life as it is without armoring ourselves with stories and assumptions. We begin by speaking and acting honestly and openly about who we are and what we experience, first of all, to ourselves. What saves us from ourselves, from stories we have been given, or the stories we have created, is simply the force of our own honest gaze. There is, as far as I can figure out, no switch to turn on the honest gaze, the honest inner gaze. But we cultivate this. We cultivate this gaze by returning again and again and again to look at our own heart with a commitment of patience and compassion. Indeed, patience and compassion are prerequisites for clear seeing and accepting. Brené Brown, a little bit later in this her book, says that the key to wholehearted living is openness to vulnerability. She writes that you measure courage by how vulnerable you are to your own heart, your core. So we could say inner courage is the energy that alters or transforms our self-view from one based on our kind of constricted stories about who we are and what we are, into something more spacious, something more expansive. So maybe another question for us to ask is, how do I be vulnerable to my own heart? Well, Dogen gives us a clue. So here's his reply to the question that he asked his patched robe monks. And it's a little bit of a Zen trope, I guess. You know, often the Zen master will fire out a question at his monks or the people gathered there. And everyone sits in stunned silence. And then the Zen teacher offers an answer to the question. So here's Dogen's reply, as it's written. After a pause, Dogen said, "Spread out your bedding and sleep. Set out your bowls and eat rice. Exhale through your nostrils. Radiate light from your eyes. Do you know there is something that goes beyond? Transcend your personal prediction of future Buddhahood from Gautama Buddha." Kind of an interesting mix of things when I read this, I thought. And Dogen encourages his monks to deeply participate in life through everyday acts, not as a matter of course, but as he says, radiate light from your eyes. In other words, to vigorously and with care engage fully in your life. Do you know there is something that goes beyond? Transcend your personal prediction of future Buddhahood from Gautama Buddha. Here, Dogen tells his monks and us to go beyond the stories. Not only to avoid getting caught in your biography, however you conceive it, your kind of view of the world and your place in it, but to even release your cherished views about Buddhahood, your precious views about what life is all about. Let them go too. The courage Dogen asks of his monks and us is to live our lives fully in the present moment without story, without a fixed view. After all, it is true. Even in a supposedly well-regulated and protected life, we don't know what will happen in the next moment. The inner courage that Dogen is alluding to is the courage to live deeply in that not knowing. Do you know there is something that goes beyond? In this way, Dogen encourages us. How do we live this courageous life of not knowing, this courageous life of radical openness? Well, Dogen instructs us, radiate light from your eyes. Pay careful attention and fully meet each moment of your life. This, he says, is to allow moment after moment of courage to arise. I think entering completely as we can into the present moment, whether it be joy or sorrow, is one aspect of inner courage. But there's another aspect I'd like to bring forward, and this aspect is discussed not by Dogen, but in the Tao Te Ching, a central kind of key Taoist text, and quite a philosophical text too. And I'm going to read you again a partial translation of the 67th chapter of the Tao Te Ching. So this is an old Chinese classical text, supposedly written by a person named Lao Tzu, but most scholars believe that really wasn't the case. No one really knows the origin of this great classical text. At any rate, here's the quote. I have three treasures in the great Tao. They are precious to me, so I hold on to them and I protect them. The first is compassion. The second is the wisdom to conserve resources. The third is the humility to keep me from getting in front of others. Why compassion? Because love is the source of true courage. If you try to be courageous without compassion, you will fail and perish. The only way to face the trials of life is to face with true courage, and with true courage defend all that is good. When you do that, heaven itself will come to your aid and protect you with its divine and compassionate power. I found this very interesting and moving. The Tao Te Ching teaches that compassion is the way to strengthen and arise courage. That courage comes to us when we connect to our heart and when we connect to the world. And while it's true, we need to courageously face the outer world, inner transformation happens when we courageously face ourselves. To face ourselves is to compassionately move closer. Closer to the source of our fear, to the inner threats that we imagine or believe are there, to whatever brings out those painful qualities in us, like aggression, selfishness, anger, dismissal, despair. By facing the meanness, selfishness, jealousy, self-denigration, pettiness in ourselves, by facing that with tenderness, we can strengthen our compassion, not only for ourselves, but for our shared humanity with all of those around us. Inner courage grows when we face the pain of our life directly. And I was thinking, isn't this really the heart of the Buddha's teaching? Just as young Siddhartha, before he became, received the title of Buddha, just as young Siddhartha did not look away at the sights of a decrepit old man, a begging woman half dead from lack of sustenance, or a leper, or the corpse on the roadside, so we too in our practice face everything, good or bad, we face it directly and honestly as we can. And it's our Zazen practice that enables us to do this. On our meditation seat, we commit with as much integrity and dignity as we can to be present with what arises. We be present with some gentleness and hopefully some compassion. In this way, we become friends with our fears, or at least we become tolerant of our fears, so that we're no longer pushed and pulled by what scares us. But we walk instead the path of courage. Those who walk the path of courage and compassion, and perhaps compassion and courage are simply two sides of the same coin. Those who walk, we call bodhisattvas. In the Mahayana stream of Buddhism, a bodhisattva is one who vows to alleviate the suffering of others and to awaken for the benefit of all beings. And as most of you know, I'm sure, there are, of course, the great archetypal bodhisattvas like Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva of Compassion, or Manjushri, the Bodhisattva of Wisdom. But the beautiful thing is, we can see bodhisattvas all around us. Today, we see and read about the courage and compassion of the healthcare workers. And those who stock the grocery stores, who work as tellers, deliver food and medicines to the housebound, mothers and fathers, you know, trying to educate and homeschool their children, maybe bring their kids some ease, and so many more. These are all, I think, bodhisattvas. I think sometimes of the many bodhisattva acts that occur every day, all around us, I think of them as acts of courage. And this courage arises from each person's aspiration, I guess, each person's best intention. In our tradition, we often use the word vow, V-O-W, vow, to express what we hold most important. And our vows engender courage because they remind us of our innermost values. Our vows direct us to how we want to live our life. In the Zen Buddhist tradition, we talk about two kinds of vows: the personal expression of our practice. In other words, kind of articulating how we want to be, how we want to live, what we want to offer this world. And there are also the four great bodhisattva vows that we chant, and we will chant at the end of this Dharma talk. Beings are numberless, I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible, I vow to end them, etc. But the personal vows that we take are specific vows, and they're kind of unique to each person. An example may be a vow to be kind, a vow to raise one's children to be open and loving, or perhaps a vow to speak the truth with compassion. A vow, a profound commitment or promise, takes us beyond ourselves. Vows are acts of imagination and foster courage by awakening us to a self larger than our kind of constricted biography that we hold inside. Dzogchen Norman Fisher, the founding teacher of Mountain Rain, wrote this: vowing is liberation from whim and weakness. It creates possibilities that would not occur otherwise, because when you're willing to stick to something, come what may, even if from time to time you don't feel like sticking to it, a magic arises, and you find yourself feeling and doing noble things you did not know you were capable of. So let me ask you, what vow or vows would help you remain upright, full of dignity, noble, and present at this time? I suggest contemplating this question. And when some wording comes to you, to write it down. Ask yourself, if it really resonates within your heart. And if it does, say it out loud. Say it out loud every day, and let it be a guide for your speech and actions. The quote that I read earlier from the Tao Te Ching made the connection between compassion and courage for us. Courage arises from the clear acknowledgement of connection of self with other. And this connection is framed in the Buddhist teachings as interbeing, boundlessness, shunyata, emptiness. Lots of ways that we talk about this connection. And in the Buddhist tradition, we have ways of cultivating or opening to this connection with others, opening to connection with our heart and with the world. So let's kind of review a little bit some of the ways we can foster compassion and courage in our life. Well, we strengthen our courage, of course, with our Zazen practice. We pledge quietly to ourselves as we sit to meet whatever arises. And when we can't meet that, when it's too painful, we let it go, setting the intention to return to it another day, another time. And we commit in our Zazen practice to build a foundation of the honest gaze. And with this honest gaze, we practice to meet fully what arises in our Zazen practice and then in our daily life. We also talked a little bit about the importance of staying in the present moment. So we establish ourselves again and again in the present moment, turning away from the worrying thoughts and anxiety by using our awareness, bringing our awareness to the body and breath. And perhaps in our daily life we can ask ourselves, how can I tend this moment? How can I tend this moment? Radiate light from your eyes, as Dogen tells us. Fully be there. This gives life to our courage. Courage is also strengthened, and I think brought forward, when we can deeply appreciate our connection with others. Again, connecting courage with compassion. Henry Longfellow, the American poet and educator, wrote, "If we could read the secret history of our enemies, we would find in each person's life sorrow and suffering, enough to disarm all hostility." A couple of weeks ago, we had a retreat on equanimity, and one of the practices I suggested to use was this contemplation. Just as I want happiness, so does this person wish for the same. Just as I have known sadness and despair, this person has also known the same. Just as I want to avoid pain and suffering, so does this person wish to avoid the same. Just as I have made mistakes, so has this person made mistakes. Another practice in the same line is the practice of Tonglen, known as sending and receiving. And just last Wednesday, Kate introduced this practice to us. And we don't have time to really go over it now, but please listen to Kate's talk and practice. Try this and see how it feels for you. This is a very powerful, courageous practice, full of meeting and letting go of our suffering and distress, and the suffering and distress of others. And remember and reflect on your vows, the great vows that we're going to be chanting in a few moments at the end of this talk. But also on your personal vows. Explore what those may be for you. And as I suggested, please write them down. Keep them close. And when you stumble, commit now to getting up and trying your best yet one more time. Let your vows ennoble you. And remember, you know, that courage engenders courage. When we see acts of courage, we are inspired to be courageous ourselves. When we encounter a bodhisattva, we are moved to act like bodhisattvas ourselves. It's helpful, I think, to acknowledge that you are part of the Sangha. You are part of this community. That you are not alone in your values or your struggles. Courage engenders courage. And maybe as a tag to this, I should remind us all, we don't have to believe all our negative thoughts. Let them go. Return to your vows. Courage strengthens, I think, like anything else, through practice. We undertake practice, this practice of courage, knowing there will be days when it will be there, strongly present for us, and other days, I guess it's taken a vacation and we can't quite meet whatever it is. But that's okay, because courage will come back. It's part of you. But don't give up practicing, strengthening it. So to be courageous is not necessarily to rush into a burning building or do something that will be rewarded with medals and accolades. It can be to live those things that you already deeply feel and accept. And give life. Give life to those. Oops. So I think I've talked quite a bit. So I'm going to end here. And I'll just stop. Thanks.